Welcome, everyone, to Good Night and Good Game, your source for geek news for the week that was. I'm your host, James, and with me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Hector.
Hello.
This week on the show, after the news, we are finally going to have a spoiler-filled talk about Secret Invasion, and spoilers are not great.
If you saw it, you might have a pretty good idea of what we're going to say. If you didn't see it, don't. Just listen to us talk about it, and then don't watch it.
There you go. But before we start, don't forget that you can head over to goodnight.gg, where as a patron of our show, you can suggest topics for us to talk about. Also, as a patron, you get access to our off-week episodes. We are currently in the middle of recording segments about martial arts films. We just recorded a couple new episodes that will go live soon. And I am currently working on the list for our upcoming spooky season movies.
Spooky season.
It's going to be good.
We're going to move from martial arts right back into horror.
Yep.
It's going to be great.
Loving all of this. And with all of that out of the way, it is time for The Prelude.
Prelude.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to The Prelude. It is time to dive into what we've been up to this week, what we've been playing, what we've been watching, and what's been occupying our free time, and what has been making us happy. Hector, what have you got for me? What have you been doing?
Okay, so I mentioned this last episode as well, but I'm still very much playing Ghost of Tsushima again. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to talk about this game without talking about like my entire life, but this game
is your entire life.
Is my happy place. Mm-hmm. Like I know we're about to get Armored Core and then Starfield, and we have Baldur's Gate, and we have Spider-Man coming up. Like the end of the year is going to be insane for video games.
Right? Yo, it absolutely
is. Wild just for bonkers. Video games.
Just bonkers.
But I am trying to be in my happy place before all that happened. Before like the it's like a pre Super Bowl ritual where I will go back to a comfort food, and that's been Ghost of Tsushima for me lately.
I'm in the same spot because I just finished Final Fantasy 16, and I had this moment where I'm like, do I start a new game or do I just go back to something that I want to play? So like I'm currently considering going back to Dead Space remake and like doing my next playthrough, because that'll only take me a week, right?
Exactly.
And so then I will have the opportunity to dive into whatever the next game is, right?
Right.
Yeah. Which is Armored Core.
When you have like two or maybe 1 week, it's a great opportunity to grab a game that you've played before, but you knew you wanted to play again, or finish up a game you wanted to finish. And that's exactly where I am right now. I'm just like enjoying my time. Almost like when you have a really great TV show that you love, you go back and you just watch it again. Yep. You know, like I've done with Grey's Anatomy too many times, or, you know,
Letterkenny.
How many times have I watched Letterkenny?
Before every season of Letterkenny, I watch all of it.
You just watch all of it because it's like 4 hours.
There you go.
Watch all of it. Exactly. So that's what I'm doing right now. I'm playing Ghosts, and I'm just like, it's like watching an old TV show. It feels amazing.
It's like coming home in a way.
Yeah.
I have that with horror movies. I have that with video games. There are some video games that I come back to that I just, like, this is a weird one. The original NES Bionic Commando is a game that I just was obsessed with as a kid. And once every like year, I just pick it up and I play it again.
Yeah.
It feels good to be a kid again. It feels good to come home. There's a lot of horror movies that are like coming home to me. 13 Ghosts. I know I say that every year. 13 Ghosts is my coming home. The Frighteners. These are my comfort horror picks, you know? And so it's good to have a comfort game and going like that, especially because you do love both samurai and martial arts movies, to get back into Ghosts of Tsushima. Like, you're invested all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And much like when I talk about my relationship with Gone Home, and like every couple of years, I just want to play a Fulbright game.
Sure.
That's like, you know, Tacoma or Gone Home, and I just want to like experience the space again. That's exactly what I'm doing right now. And I'm like slowly recognizing how I used to go back to TV shows and now I go back to video games. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's the game I'm playing right now because I'm waiting for Armored Core to come out. I have officially... We're never sponsored by anything, and we're also not anti anything. Whatever you love, just do that. Mm-hmm. But I recently canceled my Netflix subscription. Mm-hmm. I have been a member since 2012.
Wow.
Yeah. I canceled it because I disagree with too much of what they're doing, and also because I don't watch enough content there. Sure. So what I'm doing currently, because I have about 14 more days until since I canceled my subscription, they cut me off, mm-hmm. is I'm finishing the shows that I wanted to see.
Yep.
And I have, as anyone who watches the show knows, a deep relationship with The Witcher.
Mm-hmm.
And The Witcher show is...
We literally spent 4+ hours today watching a Witcher lore video that you put on at work.
We worked together, and on the TV in our office today was a 4-hour retrospective on The Witcher 3. And I had the time of my life. I talked to James way too much today while he was working about Witcher 3 lore. I would even pause the video to explain what the guy just said.
We went to lunch. We went to lunch to this Japanese barbecue spot. And I'm just like, because I've tried to play these games several times. It just, the open worldness of it doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. And so we were just on the way. And this is what I love about my friends who are obsessed with something is... the look on their faces when you ask them about it. So we're walking to lunch, mm-hmm. going to go to this Japanese barbecue spot. And I'm like, Hector, explain The Wild Hunt to me. Yeah. And you just info dumped for like an hour.
I was your own personal long form YouTube essay.
It was great.
Yeah. On The Wild Hunt and on The Law of Surprise and on who Ciri is. And it's all good. So I have a fucking thing for The Witcher as a thing. And that show is exclusive to Netflix. So right now that show starring Henry Cavill is ending and they plan to do more with it in the future. But Henry Cavill left because the show isn't respected. The source material, mm-hmm. and I agree with him because he's a wild nerd for things like that. And he was basically like, I don't like where this is going. This feels like it's going to become a dime store nothing instead, like on Netflix, instead of a faithful retelling of the Witcher stories I love so much.
The epic fantasy that it is.
Exactly. So I'm finishing that show right now, and I'm almost done with it. I have like one or two episodes left to go. It's the ending parts with Henry Cavill have been good. I've liked the show from the beginning, but they really did veer way the fuck off from the source material. We're off in La La Land. I have the same feeling I had when Game of Thrones ran out of book material, and then they just started making shit up, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Stop it. Yep. Stop it right now. There's a thing called filler in anime when the anime catches up to the manga and you need to do a side story and it's always terrible. That's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And Henry Cavill hates it and I hate it. Probably for the same reason. I don't hate it because he hates it. I hate it because it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm finishing that show on Netflix. And that's
the end of your Netflix.
The media I'm producing right now.
Okay.
I'm the other thing I want to say, and if you're a member of our Patreon, which you can join at any moment, that you decide that you like this content, you will hear before too long an episode on The Night Comes for Us.
Yes.
That's the other thing I want to talk about this week is we watched a movie that I rediscovered because I watched it when it came out and I loved it, but I really didn't have anyone to talk about.
It is on Netflix.
It is on Netflix. I didn't have anyone to talk about with it because it was like the peak of COVID and I wasn't just sharing things with people. But I got to share it with you last night and like your reaction to
it. Oh my God.
Absolutely.
Of all the martial arts movies that we have watched together, good Lord.
Yeah. This is an absolutely fantastic, epic movie called The Night Comes for Us. It's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. If you like martial arts movies and specifically the actors and a style of movie that is The Raid and The Raid 2, which are two very different movies, you will love The Night Comes for Us. You should definitely watch it as soon as you can.
It is just warning high gore factor, you understand that.
As a martial arts movie, the fight choreography is fantastic. The cinematography in general is fucking fantastic. But the gore level is horror level. It is Jason X level. It is Sam Raimi level. It is Peter Jackson level of gore.
Yes.
It is wild and gross and disturbing and awesome and hardly believable, but also too realistic all at the same time.
All right, I'm going to knock out two things real fast so we can wrap this whole thing up. You and I have been playing a game after work that is not Overwatch. We've been playing a game called Remnant 2.
Remnant 2.
It is a Souls-style game for
Dark
all
Souls
that it
with
is.
Guns.
Dark Souls with guns. Mm-hmm. Loved it. We beat it. It was great.
We can play it again and again and again.
And we are going to start a Baldur's Gate run that we will be live streaming on our Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
And we've kind of already picked out who our characters are. Yeah. I'm going to be the bard, the really slutty drow bard.
He's going to be the horniest bard.
And also, I'm probably the only person in the group that will be role-playing while we are playing the game. So it's going to be two normies and me role-playing my drow the whole time. This is peak cinema, y'all. It's going to be a good time.
It's just me and a good friend of ours and James actually showing up and doing all of the content.
I'm going to sing. It's going to be great.
And like, we're going to be like, oh, that's awkward.
Yeah, yeah, it's yeah. My drow, I've got his name picked out. It's going to be Gerard Rosencrantz. He is the lead singer of the band My Alchemical Rosencrantz, and he's super emo, and it's going to be great. Yep. We're going to have a good time.
Yep.
The other thing that I did is I played through Final Fantasy 16.
You
did. As somebody who has been obsessed with the Final Fantasy games since the literal first one when I was a kid, the one thing I have to say about this game is, they actually stuck the landing, y'all. Final Fantasy games do not tend to stick the landing.
Yeah.
This one did.
Yeah.
Celebrate that. Buy it. It is worth your time. Like that is everything that we have for the prelude this week, but stick with us. When we come back on the other side, we'll be going into all of the news in the Weekly Raid.
The Weekly Raid.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. It is time for the Weekly Raid, your roundup of this week's geek news. Kicking things off this week, we have a couple of cool horror updates to start with. Not only is A24 going to release a replica of The Hand from the hit movie Talk to Me, but the film itself that was made by two indie directors from YouTube has already been greenlit for a sequel.
I love this. They feel like the next Ari Aster, mm-hmm. you know, the next like A24 original director that's about to like blow up the world because their weird ass movie, like that A24 decide that God, they're so good at investing mm-hmm. in talent when they see it.
Yeah.
But
for perspective, I just want to point out, the writer's strike is still going on. Yeah. The actor's strike is still going on. We have talked about this previously on the show, but A24 is the one company who showed up and said, oh, these are your demands? Cool. Yep. We're down. You get all of them.
Both SAG and the WGA have recognized A24 as a studio that has literally agreed to every one of their demands and has implemented them immediately. Therefore, A24 movies get to still be made. Funny how that works.
Also, fun fact for those of you who are not watching along at home, you can't see this in the camera, but we actually have somebody in our studio right now that is from LA that has worked in and around the film industry. Good coworker of ours.
Oh,
he's a big film buff, and we've been talking about movies all night. Mm-hmm. He's just sitting in on the episode just to just watch our process.
Yeah. So, we absolutely support everything about the
thank
strike.
Thank you, A24.
Yeah.
You're absolutely wonderful.
What up, John?
There he is. That is something for the live audience. All right. Also in A24 news, Nicolas Cage is going to be starring in a dark comedy called Dream Scenario that's going to be releasing in November. Mm. The idea behind it is, quote, a hapless family man, Paul Matthews, finds his life turned upside down when millions of strangers suddenly start seeing him in their dreams. But when his nighttime appearances take a nightmarish turn, Paul is forced to navigate his newfound stardom.
So
you're sleeping one day and Nicolas Cage just shows up in your dreams.
The dream scenario. I'm happy with like all of that so far. Please continue explaining.
Everything about this sounds fun. Dark comedies are something that I'm super into.
Yeah, we need to agree that Nicolas Cage has been in a fucking role.
He really has been.
Basically since Mandy. Mm. He has only made movies that are fucking awesome and fucking do fucking Nicolas Cage.
The fact that Nicolas Cage made a movie that essentially made fun of himself in it.
God, it had such a pretentious title that I'm trying to
remember. The one with Pedro Pascal? Yeah.
With Pedro Pascal. It's like the Incredible Genius or The Unbearable Weight of Incredible Genius. It was a reference to, a lot of things. But before that, it was
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Yes.
Color Out of Space, Mandy, Pig, Renfield.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
We are having an absolute Nicolas Cage-a-sons.
Like, see, that's the word I was going to use. I was like, is cajassance the right word for this?
I mean, nickassance? I no,
cajassance sounds better.
Yeah, cajassance does sound better.
I like that.
But it's like, he's killing it, and I can't wait to see this next movie because so much good has come of him just like leaving the AAA game and just like embracing his audience.
Yep.
Because I love all of those movies.
Yep. So, let's deviate from the fun stuff real quick.
Okay.
In things that maybe you shouldn't say news, this tends to be when we talk about this on the show, when actors or directors have opinions about things. Mm-hmm. Zachary Levi, the star of the hit movie Shazam 2, mm-hmm. was at Chicago Fan Expo this week. And you know what? I'm just going to quote him to make things easier.
Yeah.
Quote, I personally feel that the amount of content that comes out of Hollywood that is garbage is huge. They don't care enough about what they make. They don't care about you. How many times do you watch a trailer and go, oh my God, this looks so cool. Then you go to the movie and it's like, this is what I get. They know that once you've already bought the ticket and you're in the seat, they've got your money. And the only way for us to change any of it is to not go to the garbage. We have to actively not choose the garbage. It will help. It will help a lot. He then went on to say that he believed that Shazam 2 is, quote, a good darn movie.
Never let it be said that I don't know, fucking actor privilege is not alive and well in Hollywood. I don't know how to. The most tone deaf thing I can think of that rivals this is Stephen Amell talking about how he doesn't like strikes and like how this is straight up throwing the industry under the bus because you think that certain things are beneath you.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite reactions in Hollywood to an interview question is Mila Kunis's husband. Who am I thinking of?
Ashton Kutcher.
Thank you. Ashton Kutcher in an interview saying, I think he was talking to an MTV audience because he got like the MTV Actor Award or whatever. It might have been for The Butterfly Effect.
But oh, such a good movie.
What he was saying was, I have been a mainstream starring actor. I have been a busboy. I have been a waiter. I have been a bartender. I've literally never had a job that was beneath me. Mm. When you talk about the work that people do, the passion projects that they do, when they're just trying to make something that other people want to look at, to call any of these efforts garbage is...
Making a movie is cynical. Magic.
And the thing about these projects, and they are magic, I absolutely believe it. The fact that a lot of movies are made in general, and the big ones, the small ones. And
if you've ever sat through the credits of a movie and said, wow, this seems like a lot of fucking shit.
Yeah.
It takes that so many people shit. To make the thing.
Yeah. When I think about movies like the best ones from last year, like Everything Everywhere All at Once or RRR or like a lot of that stuff, movies are kind of a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And if a movie isn't made cynically, and I mean, I'm talking about like You a Bull or the Emoji Movie, like
sure.
movies that are literally made as products. When you're doing anything other than that, this is a work of someone who loved a thing, who wanted to tell a story about a thing, and a whole bunch of people who came together to make that thing. Like calling any of it garbage that isn't corporate swill is an asshole move. It's absolutely. An absolute asshole move. And it's a move that comes out of incredible privilege. And I don't know where Zachary Levi gets the idea that he's like anywhere near big enough to point at things and call them.
He's
garbage.
A white dude in Hollywood.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. Showing your whole ass, as you like to say.
Yeah.
Showing his whole ass.
But obviously Shazam 2 was such
Shazam 2, pinnacle of cinema.
Pinnacle of fucking cinema.
Yeah, right next to Black Adam.
Let's talk about some real fucking cinema here. Netflix released the first trailer for their Scott Pilgrim animated series this week. All of the cast from the movie are coming back to voice the roles that they portrayed before. Now, for music, Anna Monoguchi, who did the Scott Pilgrim video game soundtrack, will be scoring the whole show.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of levels to this.
Yep.
When we start, Scott Pilgrim, the comic book, very, very cool. You should check it out. It's a great example of amazing comic.
Never idolize Scott Pilgrim.
Never, ever idolize Scott Pilgrim. This is like the people who love Tyler Durden and want to be him. It's like, yo, he's the terrorist analogy.
Right.
Like, yeah, you're taking the wrong lessons. The people who love the Empire love Scott Pilgrim, you know? Like, it's just wrong. But anyway, so then you have the movie, and the movie is fantastic. It doesn't really follow the comic, but it gets the art, it gets the vibe, the actors are amazing. And then you have the video game that came out on, like, the PlayStation 3 and Xbox way back in the day. That the art style perfectly matched the comic, and the events perfectly matched the game. And it was very cool to play because it was kind of a side-scrolling beat-em-up that had, like, RPG.
Very,
like,
very River City Ransom.
Yeah, leveling up elements to it. It was super, super cool. This project sounds amazing on so many levels because they're getting also, all of the best elements of everything that has happened to this franchise, and they're forming Voltron.
And they've always been, like, in contact with one another. When the big Panini happened a couple of years ago, they did a Scott Pilgrim reunion online, and they just kind of, like, read through the script again. And, like, everybody was just on point. Like, it was all great. And the fact they're all willing to just come back and do this, like, oh, my heart. Oh, I love all of this.
I know, yeah. And if you've never seen Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the movie, it's
Please watch that. Peak Brie Larson.
And then emerge from whatever cave you've been in and watch the rest of Edgar Wright's movies.
Yeah, please. All right. Let's move on to some video game stuff. It was announced this week that Sony's upcoming Spider-Man 2 will have added accessibility options, including the ability to change the combat speed of the game up to 70% of the full speed.
Okay.
You can also skip puzzles. You can have a bigger dodge window and even slow down opponents during chase scenes.
Okay.
So basically, the whole point of all of these accessibility options are to make a Spider-Man game that anybody can pick up and play regardless of who they are.
When I think about where this shit came from, I get so happy. Yeah, literally The Last of Us. This is the point I'm about to make. So The Last of Us, the remake of the original, and the part two had the best accessibility options any video game has ever had. All the way back, all the way forward. If you were any kind of...
if you were colorblind.
If you were visually impaired in any way. If you were tonally impaired in any way, the game had an option for you. If you had vision that made it hard for you to track permanent objects, which is a very specific brain disorder. If you had face blindness, the game had options for you that let you complete the combat, that let you get through the game, that let you experience the story.
Even little stuff like auto pick of items.
Oh, yeah, because if you can't mash a button, you can hold it down. And it's a very, very core game mechanic that they were just like, just some people need this. And it was the best word I can think of is thoughtful. It was so thoughtful and so complete with how many things that they found. And when people pointed out, oh, you missed one, they would add it.
They did.
And they just kept doing it. And it's one of the it's one of the most violent, awful stories you'll ever hear or experience. And it is gut-wrenching and, like, it
beautiful.
Makes you feel like a terrible person. But it's also beautiful and wonderful and tackles subjects like PTSD and forgiveness. And I mean forgiveness as someone who has wronged you fundamentally. It is such a beautiful story. And the fact that anyone who could possibly pick up a controller can experience this, no matter what their issues are. Whether is there too much gore? We have a thing for that. Is the lighting too harsh? We have a thing for that. Can you not see solid shapes when they move? We have a thing for that. Can you not hear? It's in like 15 languages. Do sounds get too loud? We can lower the volume of gunshots. They can do everything. And that has translated into Spider-Man.
Yeah.
One of the most mainstream franchises everywhere, but Sony has figured out
it is entirely that if
you
possible.
Want to make a game great, you need accessibility options and more people will buy it.
Because of these accessibility options, it is entirely possible that there is somebody out there who has always wanted to be a superhero.
Yep.
But has never been given the opportunity because of who they are as a person, will now be able to grab their controller and for the first time really get to be one. And that means so much, not only as a gamer, but as somebody who loves comics.
Yeah.
Somebody who we are in the middle of this, you know, for better or worse, amazing superhero stories.
Yeah.
Now more than ever, it's important that the people who are watching this media of like superhero movies, maybe they can pick up a controller and be that person for a little while. Mm-hmm. Miles is a very important character in the Marvel Universe, yep. Y'all.
And the best part about Spider-Man is that he's wearing a mask and anyone can be
Can be Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And this goes, that was Stan Lee's vision. Stan Lee's vision was always anybody can be Spider-Man. And these accessibility options are just giving weight to Stan Lee's argument. And that makes me feel things inside.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, moving on from Spider-Man, it is time to pour one out for the homies. The Xbox 360 marketplace is set to be retired in July 2024.
Games with now, gold is going away? What will I do?
And the whole 360 marketplace.
How will I play games from the 360 that no one liked from 40 years
Good
ago?
Good question. Microsoft says the closure will not affect your ability to play Xbox 360 games or DLC that has already been purchased.
Wow.
From Microsoft, they have said, quote, the Xbox 360 game content previously purchased will still be available to play not only the Xbox 360 on the 360 console, but also on the Xbox One and the Xbox Series X/S via backwards compatibility.
Nice.
They went on to say a lot has changed since the 360 launched in 2005. Take that in for a second. Technology has evolved. Expectations from players have shifted. And we have focused on making the Xbox Series X/S, that is so hard to say, the best place to play now and in the future. What has not changed is our commitment to preserving your ability to play the content you have already purchased on your preferred device, which means we are committed to supporting the Xbox 360 gameplay for the foreseeable future. And you will still be able to play and re-download previous purchase content and connect with friends. That's a statement, though.
All I want to say is, like, Nintendo, are you taking fucking notes?
I knew that's what you were going to say.
Honestly,
I knew it.
The worst part about everything about Nintendo is that the Wii is the perfect example. The first Nintendo console that was, like, truly internet connected. And then they let you buy NES games. For, like, Balloon Fighter was $5. I can't imagine a motherfucker paying $5 for Balloon Fighter in like, 2015.
Right.
But people did. 2013, 2008. But they played Balloon Fighter for $5. And when they went from a Wii to a Wii U, they didn't get Balloon Fighter.
Nope.
It didn't follow them. Like the my biggest gripe with Nintendo has been, like, your library doesn't follow you. And imagine the audience they could draw with that feature. Watching Microsoft do it as a matter of course, not as a matter of sales, is fucking inspiring.
We will not make you rebuy content that you've already purchased.
Yeah.
And we're going to do our best to port that content moving forward, is what they are saying.
Like, holy shit.
It's the bare minimum, y'all.
But it's seriously like, oh, you bought this game 15 years ago? Absolutely. Here's your game.
Yeah.
And that's because you can't get it anywhere else. You can't put a disc into anything. We have an obligation to provide it to you on the internet because you fucking paid for it.
Right.
And that's beautiful. And I want more of that from everyone.
Right. Consumer-friendly things.
Yeah.
Let's talk about consumer stuff. Let's bounce over to something that we never really talk about on the show, and that's Dota. So you and I watch the Dota Invitationals. That is
We love
TI. It is Defense of the Ancients.
Yeah.
It's a big MOBA multiplayer.
Yeah.
You know, three lanes, like lots of mobs. Mm.
There is no tournament on the internet for any game that has ever made more money than Dota. The international.
God, it was millions of dollars.
It's literally millions. Like people will buy the compendium to be able to select teams and basically do their draft for Dota, and they will sell $180 million worth of compendiums before the tournament even starts.
Yep.
It's insane.
So Valve, who owns Dota 2, has a very specific monetization model. And mind you, in the last year, they've gotten rid of a lot of the monetization in Dota.
Yep.
They have taken out battle passes. Mm-hmm. There's like, no, you play our game, you get your things for free.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy to, like, see the Dota Invitational and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you're supporting the game in a way that supports the players who play the game.
Mm-hmm.
So Valve has actually asked players of Dota 2 to stop monetizing the game workshop that they have. So yeah. Dota has a in-game workshop where you can just build your own game using their engine. And players have been using that to monetize their own games. They've been making their own variants of Dota, and they've made battle passes, and they've made subscription models. And Valve stepped in and said, no, this is a non-commercial license. You are here to make games and provide your games free to other people who are playing our system. You are not to charge for it.
Yeah, you do this for the love of the community. If you want to charge for something, you can submit your game to Steam.
Exactly.
And I get it. I do. Because Valve has a long... I mean, fucking Counter-Strike is a product of people playing Half-Life and making their own
Dota
thing.
Let's start with
Dota.
Dota. If you're unfamiliar with the history of Dota, I'm going to break it down for you real quick. Here's the short version of that. There was a game that came out years ago called Warcraft 3. Mm-hmm. In there, there was a system in which you could make other games inside of Warcraft. Inside of Warcraft, people made a custom map called Defense of the Ancients. You played heroes who had lanes. You leveled up as you killed little minions called creeps. And the objective was to attack the enemy's crystal and destroy it. You had to be better than your opponent. And it's a hardcore game. People talk shit a lot. I stopped playing because that is a level of toxicity that I do not want in my video games. But watching it is amazing. That being said, cut to years later, Valve has made Dota 2. The sequel.
Comment. I hate to stop you because you're on a thing. In classic Blizzard fashion, they decided not to support Dota.
No,
they decided
not.
That people that their fans were stealing from them, and they need to fucking stop. And so Dota was not a thing, even though it had so like 10 times more users than multiplayer Warcraft 3. If you just counted Dota, they were like, no, you stop. This is more popular than our game. You must not.
Yep.
And then the people who created Dota went to Valve and said, so we want to make Dota. And they're like, do you want to make Dota 2? And they're like, yes, and that's what Dota is now. Yep. It's Dota 2 on Steam, because Blizzard, as then as it is now, is fucking short-sighted and stupid.
Also, anyway, if you don't think this game is popular, let me tell you right now, Dota people compete in Dota for millions, hundreds of millions of dollars every year. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but the popular artist, I guess, Bass Hunter, has an entire song that is about the game Dota.
Yep.
Like, that he goes and puts on raves for, like, hundreds of thousands of people and plays a song specifically about this game Dota.
Yep.
So,
love this shit.
But for the fact that Valve said, hey, we don't want you to make games within our game and charge people for them. It should be free to the community because we're all here for the love of the game. That says something to me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Look, I get Steam wanting to do Steam stuff, and it does make sense that they're like, hey, you can't make money out of our game for a game you made from our app.
Sure, yeah.
Like, that's just logical, and they probably have to protect themselves that way legally. That being said, like, it would be really awesome if they, like, did some kind of green light thing where they're like, hey, you made a really good thing. Would you like us to help you get into the Greenlight program?
Knowing Valve, it's probably in the cards. They just didn't anticipate what is happening right now.
Oh, right.
So they're telling.
No one ever expects you to make a game out of their game. That's why Counter-Strike was so wild.
Right. And so now they're basically going like, hey, guys, halt the legal stuff. We're saying, like, legally halt everything while we figure everything else out. Yeah. And I'm sure that they'll probably have, like, a Greenlight program soon.
I mean, it would be because Valve doesn't want to make games anymore because it's too much of a financial risk for them, and they have Steam. So why would they make games?
Give me Left 4 Dead 3, you cowards.
Oh, I know. Give me fucking Half-Life anything.
Right.
Maybe just episode 3 of Half-Life 2 would be fucking nice. 14 years later, but whatever.
14 years later, my man, we are old. It is like...
Yeah, it's probably more than that.
Yeah,
it's when did Half-Life 2 come out? Like, I was a sophomore in college.
It was like early 2000. Jesus Christ.
Anyway. Yeah. I mean, I get it, and they're doing a good thing.
Yep. All right, we have two more topics to talk about. These are both a little more in-depth. The first one is we're going to keep the legal talk going. Nintendo has filed for a ton of patents for mechanics that are used in their hit game, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
There's a lot of patents, but to list a couple, they have things like the ultra hand crafting system in which you fuse things together, the in-game loading screen that shows Link's location while fast traveling, and the fusion powers of merging things together. Now, there are a lot of game developers that have taken to Twitter to discuss why A, game mechanics should not be patented, but also B, why a lot of the stuff they're trying to patent are things that they shouldn't be able to patent because that's literally how a game engine functions, and you're patenting making a game at that point, essentially.
There's a thing that we say on Reddit and Twitter about movie discussions when you... The gist of it is, I'm going to try and make this as short as possible. The gist of it is, if the only movie you've ever seen is Boss Baby, literally every movie you see, you're going to be like, oh, that's a little bit like in Boss Baby. And like, Boss Baby is not the reference you need to be looking for when you look at any literary criticism of literally anything. But it's the only movie you've seen, so it's the only base of reference you have. When I think about the type of shit that Nintendo is trying to patent, I'm sitting here like, you mean a loading screen? Are you trying to patent a loading screen? Oh, you mean like sticking two physics objects in a world together so that you can play with them as a together unit rather than a separate unit? Have you ever heard of the Halo 3 fucking Forge? Have you ever heard of the level mode creator in Excitebike for the NES?
Have you heard about Minecraft?
Minecraft! What the fuck is wrong with them? Like, they're trying to patent singing.
Video game. They didn't
invent singing.
Video game history lesson time. I'm going to take over the mic. All right. Video game history lessons. Why you should not patent a game system. So, back in the day, in the, like, 2012 era, there was a really great game that came out, and it was called Shadow of Mordor.
Shadow of Mordor.
Came out. It was renowned for this system that it built.
The
Nemesis system. And the idea was you would play the game, and as orcs went to attack you, this is a Lord of the Rings game, by the way, if you hadn't guessed. Mm-hmm. And as you were attacked by orcs and you killed them, occasionally they would get vendettas against you, or they would kill you because you were immortal, and like you, they would get traits based on the fact they killed you. They became this thing that hunted you down. It was a beautiful crafting system that was done by AI, and it just made the game, everybody who played the game had a different experience because mm-hmm. this AI did different things for every single one of them. And then EA, in EA's fucking knowledge, went, hey, we're gonna patent the Nemesis system. And everybody in the games industry went, but don't.
Yeah.
We all want to use that. We all want to, that's like saying like,
yeah, why isn't this in every game?
It's like you saying like, oh, well, I'm going to patent a platformer because I made Mario.
Right. Like, I'm going to patent jumping.
Right. And you shouldn't do that. Like, you're taking creativity out of people's hands when all they want to do is just take the beautiful thing that you built and make something even more beautiful out of it. Mm-hmm. Think about the idea of playing something like Spider-Man 2 with a Nemesis system where you fought against somebody who's a street level thug at the very beginning of the game. You just punch him out. And for whatever reason, the AI goes, all right, I'm going to take this thug and I'm going to promote him.
Yeah.
And throughout the game, this thug is going to keep harassing you throughout the game. And at the end of the game, he's going to become a supervillain by the end of the game just because he has a vendetta against you. Fuck, it's such a good system.
Spider-Man's a great example. Imagine like an Arkham Knight game.
Oh,
like,
God.
Like you beat up a street level thug and he's like, yeah, Batman beat me up one time. And like he just keeps getting stronger and stronger every time you meet him. And he sneaks up on you and like hits you in the ass when you're doing other things. And he's like, you remember me, fucking Batman? That's the system we're talking about. That's what they tried to keep
doing. They did successfully patent.
Don't patent mechanics.
We can no longer get any other games like that because EA owns the rights to it.
Yeah.
And what Nintendo's trying to do with Tears of the Kingdom is doing exactly that. They're trying to take patents out on video game mechanics and no.
But more so, they didn't invent anything with this game. Look. Tears of the Kingdom is an incredible fucking achievement of technology.
Absolutely.
They got Minecraft with Zelda to run and be good at like 30 FPS on a Switch. That's a goddamn miracle.
It is an absolute miracle.
It's a fucking miracle of engineering and technology. The footprint for Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, a modern, huge, open world game with a ton of like creation mechanics, is like 16 gigs. Mm. It's insane. It's a miracle of engineering and game design.
I can't fit an operating system on 16 gigs.
They didn't invent anything in this game.
No.
They stood on the shoulders of geniuses and they patented it and they packaged it.
They're trying to patent it.
They slapped it on a plastic lunchbox and now they're selling it. You know what I mean?
capitalism, baby. Finally, this week, Overwatch 2 has been released on Steam, and it was immediately review bombed. Many of the reviews actually come from users in China who are unable to play the game. Mm-hmm. Now, it's also negative reviews by people who are unhappy with the current state of the game. Mm-hmm. So I don't like my hero. I don't like all these things. This, in turn, with all the negativity that was going on, actually made a lot of players of Overwatch turn to Twitter and start a hashtag a couple days ago that was hashtag OWDevAppreciation. And this campaign was where players of Overwatch got to just talk to the developers of the game and say why they love the game so much and thank them for all their hard work in the midst of all the negativity that's going on online.
I mean,
this is huge. It's a big deal.
It's important when we criticize games that we don't criticize the people who made them.
The people that we're complaining about when we talk about Overwatch is not the people who made the game. Right. It's fucking Bobby Kotick and his goddamn fucking, you know, kingdom.
Yeah. Like,
that's what it is. He's the one that's putting in battle passes that are not consumer friendly. Yeah. Like the previous people who worked on Overwatch did not treat Overwatch this way.
Right. There's no one in the industry who has ever normalized the audio or contributed our assets or contributed code to a video game that has ever done something like decided how much a legendary skin costs. Mm. Those are the people we should be angry with, not the people who made the thing. And when it comes to Overwatch, there's a lot of corporate shilliness. There's a lot of Activision. There's a lot of Blizzard when it comes to the monetization of it. But you can tell when you look at the game that it was made with love by the people who animated it, the people who contributed literally anything to the actual production of these movies.
And it speaks to people who would never have their voices heard.
Right.
I'm going to get a little sentimental here. I know that I'm sitting here in an Overwatch chair in the middle of our show, that Overwatch is a really big deal to me. But it means a lot to a lot of people. The fact that so many people feel represented and seen in Overwatch. There are people that love the fact there is an autistic character.
Yeah.
The fact that people of all races are represented. And when I say people of all races are represented, I'm not like, oh, they did a color palette. No, they speak in their native languages.
Yeah, they are from
that is a mechanic of the game.
Yeah, they're not all Americans who are like, oh, yeah, I'm obviously Chinese. No, you're not. You're from San Francisco.
Right.
Like, no, these are like the character is from China.
Right. And the fact that has meant so much to so many people alone, like the gaming organization that I helped found here in Austin, the Lone Star Vanguard, came from Overwatch League. Mm-hmm. This game means a lot to a lot of people. And the fact that so many people got online this week and said, you know what, I'm unhappy maybe with the state of the game, but those of you who made it, thank you for the thing that you made. Because the game of Overwatch, while it is a first-person shooter, one of the themes that goes through all the videos, if you go online on YouTube and watch the cinematics for this game, the game is about hope. Mm-hmm. And that we should be there for each other. And it isn't about being angry and, like, you know, firing rockets into somebody's face. Right. That may be the mechanic, but the game itself is about no matter who we are as individuals, no matter how different we are, we should always come together for the greater good.
Yeah.
And
it's also one of the most creative first-person shooters on the market.
It is.
If not the most.
Because everybody's trying to copy it right now. Yeah. Everybody has been. And you know what?
And no one can.
Overwatch 2 is still better than most shooters out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There it is.
When it comes to multiplayer, like, gameplay and, like, team creation and strategy, yeah, there's not a lot out there.
There's a reason why you and I play it almost every day after work.
Yeah, yeah, because it's great to fall into, and it's kind of like a muscle you flex.
Yeah.
It's a skill.
It's fun. It's nice to just work with other people. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, you have to be working with other people.
That's everything that we have for the news this week. But stick with us, because we do have a whole ass main topic as we get into the boss room.
Boss Room.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. This is the Boss Room, our main topic for the week. Sometimes related to the news, sometimes not. This week, it is finally time I'm way too dramatic about something that I'm not happy to talk about. This week, it is time to talk about Marvel's newest TV show, Secret Invasion.
The episode you've all been waiting for.
You've all been waiting for 2 days.
Right. That you give any shits about at all.
Normally, when we talk about Marvel shows and movies, for our, if you're new to the show, we usually give them, you know, a few weeks or a month before we talk about them because we want to get into spoilers. Mm-hmm. The longer we get away from this show, which just wrapped up like 2 weeks ago, the less I fucking care about it. So we're going to fucking just talk about it.
Yeah, Hector, we kind of have to do it now.
Lead me off. Secret Invasion. It was a show that we in fact watched.
So here's the thing about Secret Invasion. I kind of want you, because you've done it and I haven't, to talk about how good the comic of this story is. And then the only reason, it doesn't have to be long. Okay. I just want you to say, like, hey, this is a great comic for these reasons.
Yeah.
So that we can contrast it with what the fuck happened in the show.
Abridged comic history from James. Here we go. There was this really great comic that happened back in the day in the early 2000s that was called Civil War. It was really great until the ending. The ending completely sucked. But that's fine. It led into multiple other various comic book arcs. One of them was something called Secret Invasion. And in Secret Invasion, the entire premise of it was anybody could be a Skrull. Now, the Skrulls in the comics, by the way, absolute bad guys. There are no good guys. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why when the Captain Marvel movie happened and we saw the Skrulls, we're like, oh shit, the Skrulls are showing up. They're bad guys. Captain Marvel will obviously kill them. And then she didn't. She was like, no, I would prefer to not do those things. Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay, Brie Larson, well, you're hot. I guess we'll accept the fact that Skrulls are awesome.
Yep.
And then things happened. Fast forward, in the comics, Skrulls are bad guys. So when Secret Invasion happens in the comics, when people start procking and becoming Skrulls, it is your friends, your family, your cat.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, what the fuck happened? This is because...
literal worst nightmare.
If you as a comic book reader ever said to yourself, well, it was weird that in this one run of Spider-Man, he acted a little bit weird. Secret Invasion said, yeah, by the way, that wasn't Spider-Man in those 12 issues. That was a Skrull. It literally just readjusted the continuity of Marvel Comics. And it went far back and it went deep. And then we got Secret Invasion, the show, which was absolutely none of those things.
And here I go. So Secret Invasion, the show, is the most recent Marvel Studios show to keep Disney Plus afloat while we're in the glut of Marvel and Star Wars content until Ahsoka can come out. You know, they gotta make it good, which I, please God, let it be good.
Please God, let it be good.
So we got Secret Invasion, a show nobody asked for, we weren't ready for, that the story couldn't be told properly. And
there was no setup for this.
Here's the problem with me for this show. They did the whole thing with a comic. Where they tried to tell a story about how anyone can be a Skrull, and Skrulls have infiltrated the government and S.H.I.E.L.D. and the MCU.
And the taco bar down the street.
The taco bar, but one of them's War Machine, but also one of them...
Why is War Machine...
Yeah, everyone's a Skrull, and it's like, wait, what the fuck? I thought, wait, Skrulls at the end of Captain Marvel were refugees. Mm-hmm. We had decided they're not bad guys. Why are they taking over the world? And the show is like, shut up, nerd.
Because things...
Yeah, and so the show gives you beats from the very good comic, mm-hmm. and beats from whatever the fuck they were writing to give you this show, and it just squishes them together and expects you to be like, oh, Secret Wars. It's not Secret Wars.
So I need to preface this entire discussion before we move forward with this with the big cloud hanging over this. Secret Invasion, if you have not seen this show, is a show that you absolutely do not have to
watch. Honestly, don't.
And I'm saying this to somebody who says, you know what, even the worst Marvel show or movie, go please watch it, because it's all part of the continuity. There was no continuity. There was nothing gained by the 6 hours of this show.
Right. There is more of a reason to watch Thor 2 than this movie.
Oh, God, unfortunately. At the very beginning of Secret Invasion, Nick Fury steps off his space station and goes, all right, time to fucking kick some Skrull ass. And then at the end of it, he gets back into that same ship because we can't have any continuity drops before the next fucking Marvel movie. This show delivers nothing to you as a watcher of the Marvel Universe. It does not progress the plot forward. It does nothing other than kill off a really good character.
Mm-hmm.
And then say...
Kobe Smulders. Fucking right? Rip.
Like Rip. Like Maria Hill in the comics becomes the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. when Nick Fury dies.
Maria Hill that rules.
That should have been the way that this whole thing ended. Yeah. Secret War should have been like, oh shit, somebody just killed Nick Fury. Who's going to step up? Obviously, it's fucking Maria Hill. Yeah. Like, that's the way it should have gone down. Instead, she has gone down... in a way that you watch it and you go...
Throw away.
It's a throwaway. And they go back to it three or four times. Like, there was no emotional impact.
There was this thing going on while we were watching the show, because we were watching it week to week, because it was a week to week show on Disney Plus, where... I mean, we're going to spoil it. We already told you that. So I'm very sorry for all of the spoilers as of right now. So if you want to watch the show, go ahead and do
it. Don't.
But whatever. Maria Hill dies in the first episode, and that's when Kobe Smulders' fucking plot ends, because she gets killed for no reason whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in the next 3 to 4 episodes of a 6-episode show, they keep listing Kobe Smulders in the credits, even though they're only doing flashbacks of the scene she died in.
Yep.
Not from new angles, and not new footage. The exact same scene we saw in the first credited episode because of her dying.
We're just going to show that again.
It is a... I just did a whole thing in this episode about calling something garbage, and I'm not going to call this garbage because some people put a lot of effort into making this show, but there is a cynicalness to reusing the same footage over and over again because you just need to get the scene across and you don't want to film anymore. And that's, but they kept putting her in the credits of the show, even though they use the same scene they used over and over again. Like, I don't understand. When it's someone like Kobe Smulders, it's like, is she going to be in this episode?
Okay.
Are we going to see more about it?
So question...
Like, fuck,
I'm going to pose a question. I'm going to pose it to you first, Hector. And I actually am going to ask our guests the same question. When you think of a dramatic death in a movie that has stuck with you, that even after that shot was fired or the blade happened, like when you saw that thing that's... stuck with you, and all it took was you watching it the once that it had an impact. Just give me one off the top of your head.
Oh shit. I mean, the easiest one to think of, because we've been talking Lord of the Rings tonight, is Boromir's death, you know?
There you go.
Yeah.
Boromir's death,
arrows,
rising
like
music.
Yeah. Redemption, though, was an asshole, but all at once, and it's good, good death.
All right, to our guests, I know that you're not here on the podcast. Just name a movie death that had an impact to you, top of your head.
Guys just said Boromir.
Boromir.
You're right.
Yeah.
He loved those halflings.
Yeah.
He loved them.
Yeah, he wanted to protect them.
There you go. This is a character who was not a main character that when they died, they left an impression. We had Maria Hill. We had Kobe Smulders playing this role of the head of S.H.I.E.L.D.
She's been doing since the first Avengers.
She deserved a fucking hero's death. She deserved an anthem to her death if she was to die. But more importantly, what she deserved was to take over Nick Fury's position.
Yep.
And what we got was... sweep her away and call it a fucking day.
They literally wiped her away like Scarlett Johansson style. Like, oh, she wants out. We're going to get her out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How I Met Your Plot Point was the name of it. And we swept it away.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Rhodey real quick. Rhodey was the big reveal, right? The Rhodey, the man that we knew from all of these movies. War fucking machine was a Skrull. At some point.
Yeah,
it's really not clear.
We find him in a hospital gown, which is really unclear because, like, the illusion is he's been a Skrull since he lost his legs in Civil War. That cannot be. He was in Infinity War. He was in Endgame. Was he a Skrull? Was he a Skrull putting on
the world
armor,
will never know.
Wearing fake legs even though he could walk easily?
Yeah.
Like, no.
Was he showing up to Tony Stark's funeral?
And was he making jokes with Tony about him being Tony Stank to Stan Lee? Like, no. That wasn't a Skrull. Come on.
Right.
And you know what? If you show Rhodey in a hospital gown, it could literally be any part of his life after he lost his legs. It makes perfect sense. But we're not meant to be generous that way.
It would have really been...
Why would they put him in this...
It honestly would have been funnier and have more of an impact if Rhodey took over being a Skrull when the actor changed.
From Iron Man 1 to Iron Man 2? That's when he's a Skrull?
That would have made more sense.
Yeah, because the line the first time you see him is, "I'm here, it's me, just deal with it."
Yeah.
Fuck, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
The show is incredibly disrespectful to everyone involved, every character involved.
To the source material, it's disrespectful. This was a show that should have... So here's the problem. I'm going to get into this talk. Here's the problem with the Marvel timeline that we always get at Comic-Con. We get the Marvel timeline and we say, here's all of the movies that are coming out and we're going to put this in this kind of order. Something like Secret Invasion doesn't get to be, if I was a Hollywood producer, named that early. Right. Because what you want to do is, if you care about the comic series Secret Invasion, if you care about the source material, what you do is you say, all right, everyone, Kevin Feige and all of the rest of you, I want to do Secret Invasion. We're going to do Skrulls. I need for the next 2 years all of you to give us a reason why the Skrulls may have a bad faction.
Mm-hmm.
But also at the same time, we need to start deciding as a communal group who is a Skrull and who is not. And that when that happens, when this 6-episode thing happens, when the Mother of Dragons herself shows up to be a Skrull, it has a fucking impact. Because at this point, I'm watching Secret Invasion going, okay, Rhodey's a Skrull. That kind of fucks with continuity a bit, but... they just offed Maria Hill for no reason. I don't care. I literally do not care.
Yeah. The president, yeah.
You didn't make your characters act weird for a couple movies or something, right?
Right. Well, that's the thing. They didn't do anything. And all I keep thinking is that I'm not trying to be like a Nando, like, let me rewrite the MCU for you thing. Right. But all I can think is, like, they could have done this so much better. We could have had the Marvels to remind us that Skrulls are a thing on Earth, and then for a few movies had, like, a few Skrull hints in there.
Yeah.
And it would have been a great idea to bring back a bunch of actors who quit the MCU because they didn't want to just be these characters for 20 years to do, like, a 10-minute scene.
Shit, man!
Been like, oh, fuck, Tony Stark is a Skrull right now, and, like, you can kill them on screen, and they get to do a death scene.
Right.
And then they get to fuck off because they're tired of this shit.
If you could get Evan Peters to show up as fucking Quicksilver in WandaVision, like, the least that you could do is, like, it's just...
You could have had a Thor. You could have had a Chris Evans. You could have had, like, you could have had Robert Downey Jr. just show back up and for, like, 5 fucking minutes and then turn out to be a Skrull, and that would have been awesome.
You could have had the kid from Iron Man 3 show up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been good.
The problem with this, and here's the thing. If you're a longtime listener of the show, that you know that we always try to find the good in all of the things that we watch. We are a positive group. We are not angry people. I've been saying it
since I started on this podcast. Liking things is more fun than not liking things.
It is so much more fun.
And we always try to find the positive in things.
And we got to the end of that last episode of Secret Invasion, and we went, did we just waste 6 hours of our life?
Yeah, like what?
What benefit did this have? Because ultimately, that's the question. This thing reset itself back to zero at the end. What I said at the beginning of this discussion, which was Nick Fury walks off of a ship, and then when it ends, he just walks back onto the ship because the next movie needs to start with him on the ship.
Yeah. So there's one or two other things I want to talk about.
Yeah,
But before we wrap this up, Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury is probably one of the most inspired casting choices ever. And it was very obvious, but there it was.
So do you know the history about that?
Oh, yeah. The whole comic book thing.
Right. For those of you who may not know, James History Hour, here we go. Part 4 now. comic book history. There were multiple comic series going on over Marvel Comics. There was the primary continuity, which is the 616. If you ever hear 616 being brought up in the Marvel movies, it is A, because that is the primary Marvel timeline. Also B, that is the area code of New York, mm-hmm. which is why that is the primary timeline. But more specifically, when we talk about these things, like Nick Fury in the comics for a long time was just a white dude.
Just an old-looking, badass white dude.
Yeah. And at some point, there was a new series that they were going to make called The Ultimates, or it was even before The Ultimates that this happened. They made a new version of Nick Fury. And the creators said, okay, what's the new Nick Fury going to look like? And at the time, this is before Marvel movies were really a thing.
Oh, yeah.
The artists and writers of Marvel Comics fan casted Samuel L. Jackson to play Nick Fury. And they said, wouldn't it be funny if we just wrote this character to look and act like Samuel L. Jackson? And they did. And it took off. And it was popular. And then when the Marvel movies started happening, they walked up to Samuel L. Jackson and said, so yeah, we've been writing this character to be you for years. Would you be willing to? And because he is a working class actor, Samuel L. Jackson, before the words were even finished, said, yeah, I'll absolutely motherfucking take on the role.
Absolutely. And this is what I want to talk about. Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury is not only inspired, but it's like correct. It's good. It is an excellent acting choice, and it is an excellent casting choice. And he has done nothing but gold with this entire role. And that doesn't end before Secret Invasion. He is excellent.
He is the best thing in that.
In Secret Invasion.
Yeah.
Couple things. Samuel L. Jackson is also a working actor who has a long history of things, and they play into that constantly. The amount of, like, sidelining that he got in this show bothers the shit out of me. First F-bomb ever dropped in the MCU was by Chris Pratt. I'm not upset because it was a James Gunn movie and it was well done. But why wasn't it Samuel L. Jackson?
Right!
Motherfucker's famous for saying motherfucker.
Right.
Like here we are.
Let a motherfucker say motherfucker.
But secondly, he's also so famous for saying a word that I will absolutely not say. It starts with an N. But he's absolutely super famous for saying that. And if anyone was ever going to say it in the MCU, it should have been Samuel L. Jackson.
Yep.
But we get the perfect scene in this show where he's trying to describe what it was like being a U.S. spy as a black man in Russia in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And he's just talking to another person.
He's talking to Rhodey.
He's talking to Rhodey and he's like, look, it was all like this. It was, you know how we got intelligence back in the day? It was people like me buying drinks. And he didn't say people. And he certainly didn't say the N-word. But you know what he said? And forgive me, everyone, because I know this is a throwback, but it's still not a good word to use. He called himself a spook.
Yep.
And I was just like, fuck, that's like, isn't that just putting the N-word in my head without saying it? Yeah. Like that, but like not letting him just do it? Like oh, what no. is
so,
that?
So in that particular scene, I'm sorry, it wasn't Rhodey he was talking to. He was talking to a white dude.
He was.
And I believe that it was the white dude who was like, oh, you were a spook. And his response was, you can't say that word.
Yeah.
Like literally they're telling the audience.
Their response was, I don't think you can say that word. And he said, I can say that word. You can't say that word. And it was like, it was so obvious what the line was supposed to be and what the interaction was supposed to be.
Right.
And it would have been honestly a great spot in Marvel to do this,
right.
And they just cowered away from it, even though they had the perfect scenario and the perfect time to do it, and it was good writing, I'm sure, when it was written, because it had everything in it, and they just sighed away from it, and then Star-Lord gets to say, open the fucking door, and while it's a fucking hilarious and amazing, it's not where any of these lines should have been dropped first, but they... What I'm trying to point out is that they had no respect for this fucking show when they wrote it. Secret Invasion as a whole.
So, we only have a couple more things to talk about, but real quick, when you say there is no respect for things in the show, one of the things we have been talking about on this podcast a lot is the use of AI in various things when it comes to the literal writers and artist strike that is going on right now. We have to talk about the intro to this show, which was completely generated by AI.
Well, when you say something is completely generated by AI, the artist did work on it. Artists did And it's not like they typed a prompt that like, hey, Skrulls and Samuel L. Jackson and, you know, and that's not what it spit out. Right. Artists absolutely worked on this intro. What they did was they used AI generation models to make it look fucking awful and uncanny because right. that was the idea. So what I mean to say is like they did use AI, but they didn't use it in a way that cut people out of work. And it's important to point that out because that's not something we're accusing them of.
Right. Yeah, at no point during this did Marvel say, hey, we got rid of our artists.
Yeah. They're not like, hey, oh, we generated this with AI. Yeah. Isn't it dope? Like, no. Yeah. The point was, it looks fucking weird because Skrulls are invading and, like, there's an off uncanniness to
it.
But it was still fucking wild.
That if we weren't in the middle of this big fight against AI, it probably wouldn't have landed as roughly as it did, but this intro was kind of wrong place, wrong time, bro.
Right. It gave off the exact wrong message considering how bad the show was and how much it felt like it was written by a fucking AI.
Yeah.
Because it was like the most obvious beats, but also like the beats no one would pick because they suck.
Yeah.
And that was the writing for this show. And I can't explain it better in any other way other than, like, it feels like it was written by an AI, not that the intro was generated by AI.
Yeah. All right. We have talked a lot about this show, the things that have happened in it. We need to wind this show down. Hector, I need your final thoughts. Like, just unabashedly, what are your final thoughts about Secret Invasion?
So I need to premise this by saying I am super, super looking forward to the Marvels. Mm-hmm. I loved Miss Marvel. I love Captain Marvel. I adored WandaVision. Mm-hmm. And all these characters coming together, I can't wait for it. This was supposed to be the fucking MCU TV show that leads into the movie like they have a formula of doing. And I can't think of a worse misstep in all of Marvel history. I would, again, like I said earlier, rather watch Thor the Dark Crystal or whatever Thor 2 is called than this. And to me, that is the most embarrassing Marvel movie there is. Mm-hmm. Just like because that movie wasn't cynical. They just didn't have their fucking feet under them. And and this shit feels cynical.
They were trying to figure out where to go next. They didn't know.
Yeah.
By this point, we have had 20 fucking plus movies.
And that might be my big complaint is that with this, they knew exactly where they were going and they didn't give it the time and artistry and fucking respect it deserved and just shit it out so that they would have something to do that led into the next
movie. I think when you talk about that, they were more relying on the name, the fame of the name.
Yeah.
Than what the name actually means. And this is, I'm going to do a little side tangent. This is a problem that I had with Civil War going back when. Because Civil War in the comics was a really big deal. This was heroes versus heroes. And people died.
Oh, yeah.
And Civil War in the movie.
And there were X-Men. And there were fucking like,
So Civil War in the fucking comics, like people died. And like there were tragedies that happened. Civil War in the movie was like, we fought at an airplane hangar, y'all. And it was fun. Don't get me wrong.
It's a great movie, but everyone had a rough weekend versus the comic run.
Both Secret Invasion and Civil War did not have the emotional impact they should have. Mm. They were relying on the fame of the name, and that was my biggest problem.
Yeah, it's I don't want to lump Civil War into this because I think it's a good movie, but like Secret Invasion feels like Uwe Boll presents Tomb Raider.
Yeah, that's what it is.
He's literally making it because the name recognition will get some sales and the rest he can write off as a flop for tax insurance.
Absolutely. Well, if you saw Secret Invasion, I want to know what you thought about it. That's everything that we have for the show this week. Don't forget that you can head over to goodnight.gg to become a patron of our show. You can go over to facebook.com/GNGGcast where you can chat with us, as well as talk to me directly at GNGGcast on Twitter. But until next time, for Hector, this is James.
And for James, this is Hector.
Everyone, good night.
And good game.